Hey,
welcome to
Urban Planning is Not Boring. I'm Sam.
And I'm Nat.
All right. Hello, everyone. We have a very exciting guest on the podcast this week. We want to welcome Desiree or Dee Powell. She is the founder and owner of Do Right by the Streets, which is an urban planning group, and the Black Planner Collective. We want to just welcome you to the podcast, and we are just so excited to have you here to chat about kind of your path to planning and all the amazing kind of things that you're doing. You are very active in the planning and placemaking spaces, which are a really interesting intersection that I think Natalie and I both aren't super familiar with. And so we are just so excited to chat with you about kind of what you've been up to.
For sure. Thank y'all for having me. I really appreciate it. Like you mentioned, my name is Desiree, or Dee. I am based in Texas right now in Houston, but originally from Arlington, which is like 20 minutes from Dallas. And I am an urban planner by trade. The placemaking thing kind of came in tandem, like after school was over. And right now I work a 9-to-5 with the Conference for the New Urbanism, or CNU. So it's a national nonprofit centered around legalizing walkable places, creating places, safe public spaces, that kind of thing. And another 9-to-5, which is running and operating DRBTS, or Do Right by the Streets, which is my own urban planning group, like you mentioned.
And can you kind of tell us what inspired you to start your own planning group? You know, did you feel like there was some gaps in the current planning practices that you believe that the group was able to fill? And can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, for sure. So I came out of grad school in 2018 and went into the public sector. So I did city planning as a planning tech, which was really like bare bones technical, like an intern with benefits, basically. But it exposed me to a lot of things that planning school just like didn't prepare me, or maybe couldn't prepare me for, in the sense of like actually reading site plans and understanding this other part of like planning that we didn't really focus on so much in my graduate program. So while in that job is when I really got my first taste of interacting with the public, interacting with developers and realtors and all the things, and with citizens that were trying to buy land or bought land and were kind of like pigeonholed in it, in a sense of the zoning would allow them to do what they had planned to do when they purchased it, or to the scale that they had thought. And that was a huge gap that I felt like. The city that I first worked in was predominantly Black and Hispanic. And it was, you know, almost like a culture shock to them to realize, or to know that certain things can be done on their property that they had bought, or people that had went and bought property from the auction or whatever. So that gap came from just like, honestly, like mental burnout. Like the first 2 months of that job, I was just like burnt. I was defeated because I didn't know like what to do. As far as like planning school, didn't like, I wasn't prepared for that, to like not be good at something immediately and then not really know how to solve a situation with the solutions that were presented at City Hall. So I took my own spin, even at work, of just like sitting down with people, creating more of this like what you're talking about, like what we're doing right now, like an informal conversation, trying to do a lot of heads up, since we, you know, as an employee of a public sector, you can't necessarily make recommendations, but suggestions type of thing. Kind of like giving people the cheat codes of, to like, hey, maybe you shouldn't buy this, or maybe you shouldn't get into this if it doesn't align with X, Y, and Z. So that's where really I started my own thing. And then a big part of it being representation. I didn't see a lot of Black planners when I was in graduate school. And even when I got out of graduate school, there weren't a whole lot of front-facing faces of people that are doing it. They're successful. They didn't have to quote unquote sell out. They're standing in their truth, so to speak. And originally it was just 2020. I just created us like a blog space just to air out grievances with myself, and then like being a planner and being Black. And it kind of evolved into this zoning and land use awareness in Black and Brown communities, as well as the idea of placemaking or placekeeping, place creation. Everybody calls it something different. I was really fascinated by that, just for the fact that my school didn't really offer that as a certification or a pathway. But I came into planning wanting to be a quote unquote parks planner because I was already in parks and recreation. And a big part of what I wanted to do was engage people through outdoor recreation, through sports. That's what I grew up playing sports and kind of like had that athlete brain fog of now what if I don't play sports anymore. So that's where it came into play. And then of course, in the public sector, sometimes there's no room for like creativity or thinking outside of the box. So I was like, there's gotta be a way to do this without spending thousands and thousands of dollars and really being proactive instead of reactive, and like giving people this urban planning like concept without them having to sit through like a public town hall meeting or city council or having to go to like a lecture or something. So people are like ingesting it without knowing it, because it just feels natural. It just, these places feel like they're supposed to be here already.
Yeah. Can you really quickly, for folks that may not really understand the concept of placemaking, could you kind of break that down and explain, in your view, like what you really think is important about placemaking and what placemaking really encompasses?
To me, it is, I don't like, a lot of people like to say curating spaces or creating spaces that are abandoned. I look at it as cultivating and enhancing with that community and its culture intact, whether there's history there, legacy, whatever the case may be. It's reimagining what underutilized lots or parcels or buildings can be, and also identifying like a community need, whether that's food security, economic mobility, even just like a hangout spot. Placemaking to me is about enhancing the places that have always held a place in a community. They just need a little TLC.
That's really interesting, because I've definitely heard like controversy with the term placemaking, because it's like the place has been there, the people have been there. Like, you're not necessarily like making a place. It's like, how do you kind of like bring that place to life within the community, and like exactly what you were saying of like kind of enhancing it and like revitalizing the place within the community that like might fit a community need. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that like explanation is really important to keep in mind when we're talking about like placemaking. Yeah. And I like how you use the word or like how you said people call it curating, but it's not just like curating a space. Like, it's more than that.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. It's definitely like a big thing for me and with DRBTS is going from temporary to permanent. So that's in like as a whole. Most people see placemaking projects as, hey, we did a cool thing, now it's on you to like make, figure out how to like make it a thing all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's a big load to carry for a community, especially mm-hmm. a community of color that may not have like the organization stabilized, or they may not even, they probably even after doing the activation still don't really know like what is placemaking. We know they brought all this cool stuff out, but like how do we transition and take over? So a big part of that is going from temporary to permanent and making it accessible. And like you said, I didn't make the space, you know what I'm saying? I use the knowledge that I have as a planner and with the desire I have to be in outside in places and places that need to, you know, be highlighted, to kind of combine all these things into one. So where people not only see this one space, but they also expose them to this entire community and what they have going on. So it's kind of like a catch-all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting too, the way that, you know, I'm not very familiar with placemaking, but the way that you explain that, it is something that we hear quite often. And again, I think it's just in the way that people will frame the conversation, or maybe it might be called something different. But I think it is trying to find like spaces in which the community can come together and realize that we all, you know, share this really amazing open space and we can all come for recreation or for peace or for positive vibes or, you know, whatever the case is. And so I think it is our responsibility as urban planners to make sure we are creating spaces like that for folks. And I think it's also the fact that we have so many existing spaces that I think are just not being utilized to their full potential. And I do think there is just so much opportunity for us to enhance those spaces in a positive way that's also not going to negatively impact the community.
Sure, most definitely. And that's, you know, you never trying to take the space, for me, of like a public park or city-owned facilities like a recreation center or a community center. You're trying to fill in the gaps, or you're trying to do things that, you know, the city's hands may be tied, or the money may not be there, or the time, or the staff. So with placemaking, it is, when people ask me about it, I tell them it's as simple as, you know, organizing people and picking up trash. It seems mundane at first, but doing it consistently, people just start to see, they start to recognize, the community starts to like, okay, yeah, they came and picked up trash on the day that everybody else in the city picks up trash, but okay, now they've been here on a regular basis. That may not seem like placemaking, but the moment that you activate a space and you pop up a tent and you bring out a DJ and you do, you know, you kick it and you congregate after you pick up the trash, like, to me, that's activating a space. That's placemaking.
Absolutely.
And I was hoping that you've alluded to this in this conversation, but kind of talk a little bit about like the mission of DRBTS, excuse me, and kind of why you started this and kind of how it's grown and like what are the kind of services and stuff that you offer through that group.
For sure. That's always a hard question for me. I'm really bad at it. If it was like an elevator pitch, but I would say the mission is bringing awareness to zoning and land use to communities of color, primarily Black and Brown, education about it to further understand policy that works in their benefit, as well as the place curation and the placemaking of creating self-sufficient communities that are stabilized. Like when you think about a private consultant, you think, you know, I'm only going to give you enough so you can keep coming back. That's an invoice, that's money. For me, it's more of, for myself and DRBTS, it's, I want to equip you with whatever, with all you need to be self-sufficient. I'm one person. I can't be in 1,000 places at once. I can't be in 2 cities at once, even if they're both in Texas. So it's exposing communities of color to what's possible, and how to work the loopholes of the policy, as far as zoning and land use, and utilizing that to create spaces. Because in a lot of places, that is to the unknown eye, that's the biggest barrier, is the zoning, the land use, and like the policy and the permits. As far as services, the placemaking, the place curation is a thing. So it can be like full on out, like what we're doing in South Dallas, or it can be smaller as far as this whole idea of like vendor curation, of dealing with the permits. That kind of came as like a brainchild out of the food park. Working for the public sector, understanding the permitting process from a couple of different angles, has proven or seemed to be beneficial for people that just don't understand it, or don't have the patience, or the just don't feel like getting the runaround. Another aspect of that is zoning and land use research, combing through ordinances, figuring out things. And it's not for like big projects. I despise like comprehensive plans and comprehensive meetings when I was working at the city, any city that I worked at. It was just a lot. So I focus more on like area plans, small neighborhood plans, and even like individuals of just like nonprofits, individual owners, or people who are interested in it. It's much more tangible. And for me, it allows me to focus more on that particular person instead of trying to balance thousands of comp plans and just me as not seeing comp plans coming to fruition in really any city that I've worked in. So, and then the last, I guess, leg of it is like public speaking. That's something that I don't really advertise a lot because I haven't been extremely, I guess, comfortable in doing it. Like virtual is cool, but I haven't, I've done it in person once, but just in the sense of bringing urban planning and making it accessible, making it less complex, less formal, and this idea of representation, going into classes or spaces where there aren't a lot of Black planners, and then there are definitely not a lot of women in the room at all, and definitely women of color in planning. That aspect of showing up as myself, and also that connection to students, early professionals, young adults, whatever the case may be. So it kind of spans, but I do try to like focus a lot on the zoning and land use education, especially when a city is willing to dish it off to somebody else because they may not have the bandwidth.
Yeah. And I feel like when it comes to zoning and land use, that's something that's not an easily digestible topic. So trying to make it more accessible to folks so that they really understand, you know, what it means to, you know, for spaces to be zoned in a specific way, and also acknowledging the history of that kind of zoning. And, you know, Sam and I talk about this a lot of like really trying to get people to really understand these concepts, but not in a way that's so jargony and, you know, so hyper specific that like you would really have to have an urban planning degree to understand. We want to make it so much more digestible. So that's really great, the work that you're doing. And could you tell us a little bit more about, you had kind of mentioned this, the Sunny South Dallas Food Park, like how it started and how it's grown and, you know, all of that.
So it started out as the MLK Food Park, and I was a sub consultant underneath Better Block, which is a nonprofit placemaking organization in Oak Cliff. And that was, so they were part of a bigger project, and that was like a 30-day activation to activate a lot that hadn't been utilized in about a decade. And the premise of that was to activate the space with food trucks and food vendors, and to kind of like lean on the city of Dallas about their mobile food permitting processes, as far as they were expensive, challenging, and it seemed to really impact Black-owned businesses, particularly in South Dallas. So we ran that for 30 days-ish with weather pending. It was great. It was, you know, a huge success. I think we like made it on a TikTok a couple of times. Somebody like put it on Google, like a thing. People were coming from all over just to see it. We activated Friday through Sunday, and it was great. Community really positively accepted it. When it came time for it to end and the breakdown, it was an interesting transition of the bigger organization, like that put up the money, was moving on to their next project, and they didn't necessarily want to renew the land lease and be responsible or liable. And then Better Block, that is their motto. They teach you, they show you that it's possible, and then with the hopes of handing it off to an organization that can take it on. And there wasn't one that was really equipped or really felt like they could do it. And for whatever reason, I had the harebrained idea of, yeah, I'll take it over and we'll figure it out. We'll figure out how to make it permanent. So I and myself and DRBTS took it over in May of 2021 and ran like our first independent food park, MLK Food Park phase two, I think in July. Yeah, July of 2021. Happened to stumble on a property owner that I met through somebody else who was willing to let us rent his property for the day. And we basically transformed it in a matter of 8 hours. So we did that for a couple of phases, a couple of iterations. And once I started it, I was always in the mindset of taking it from temporary to permanent, like taking it from one day of the month to 2 days and three, and then like a full scale of just not vendors, but also community resources, community impact, as well as business resources. That was a big challenge that a lot of the vendors were expressing, whether it be funding, just like education and knowledge, financial literacy, structure, things like that, that a lot of these people were still working day jobs, so didn't necessarily have the time or the money or even the energy to like sit down and Google all of these or go through all of these things. So as each phase came up, we kind of grew a little bit more and more and more. So we were kind of outgrew the lot that we were using. He was great. We did really well there because it was visible to the public right off of one of the busiest streets in South Dallas. But we were approached by Fair Park First, which is the nonprofit arm of Fair Park. So the State Fair of Texas is a huge deal in Texas. It's in Dallas. It's for like 24 days, and it's just this, like, this anomaly of things. Mm-hmm. And Fair Park has a very interesting history with the South Dallas and Fair Park community, as it displaced tons and tons of Black families to build the park. The park is about 200 plus acres. They were displaced with the notion that they would also have access to the park and be able to utilize it as a park. And they weren't. They had one day a year to go to the fair. Other than that, they weren't allowed to go in the park. In the midst of that, that brought in the highway, which bisected the community more so. Mm-hmm. So making the decision to go inside of Fair Park was a tough one. We got a lot of pushback on that one, just because of, like, why would you do that? Knowing the history of, you know, racism and segregation. South Dallas is a community, like most Black communities, historically Black, that operated in its own, like outside of the city. Like, they took care of their own. They self-sufficient, Black-owned businesses, day-to-day service uses, dentist, doctor, cleaners, all that kind of thing. When Fair Park came, it almost decimated those things. And then when the highway came, it just kind of knocked off what was left. Mm-hmm. So transitioning into Fair Park was a decision based on infrastructure needs, because they have so much space. And we really wanted to tap back into the park aspect. They have a crazy amount of green space that it's like six parks in one. And allowing the community to see, like, this was accessible to them. Most people don't, before the food park, to my knowledge, most people weren't going inside a Fair Park to utilize it as a park. It is a public park, but just from history, you know, when you're told stories by elders, it's just like a kind of like an off limit zone.
Yeah.
So we've grown into that as far as being able to utilize not only outdoor, but indoor space. And that allows us to operate when it's like blazing hot in Texas, or if the weather isn't always as cooperative, but also to provide this space that is transitional. So we've been running with the tagline "more than a food park," to where we want people to see that it's not just like a food truck yard and you just hang out, you know, drink and go home. It's, you come here and you experience it. You come here and you really take a full breath of, like, who South Dallas is, this community, their history, their legacy, and really trying to embed that more into the park. Of this foundation was already built. It just needed the right pieces in place to make it real. While also providing the space to kind of act as an incubator space. A big part of that inspiration came from Vector 90, from Nipsey Hussle, this idea of introducing entrepreneurship to Brown and Black youth, as well as the community as a whole. So that's kind of the concept that the model that I took when I was thinking of, okay, what does permanent look like for us? So in the time that we've grown, we're now, you know, still in the hunt for a permanent home and a place that not only allows the food trucks to do their thing, but also allows an additional community space for people to gather and start to check some of those, like, low hanging items as far as societal challenges of reliable internet connection, access to a variety of food options, healthy and not so healthy, mental health support, mental health counseling, at a rate that is affordable, or that's even just like taken care of by the food park for people that don't have the access to it. Mm-hmm. And security, food security, economic mobility. That's a big thing that has lacked. Of course, affordable and attainable housing is a very spread throughout issue, and it is just as present in South Dallas. But a big part of my approach to that, when people ask about why aren't we touching on that, is there's a lot of housing being built, so to speak, but there's a huge lack of, like, economic mobility in South Dallas. Like, average household median income is like $33,000. So it's not on track with the average house now being built is like $300,000.
Yeah.
So it's, the housing is coming, but it's not affordable for the people that are there, or the people that are trying to come back, or people that are there trying to maintain because maybe their taxes are going up. So the food park kind of combines all of these elements, these smaller elements of urban planning, into one, to where like we don't have to constantly beat it into people of, hey, this is what we're doing, this is what it looks like. But it is something that we always, you know, people have to experience it to see it in like its full force of where we started as this truly a special event, to where we are now of it's not a special event. We want it to be something consistent that the community can rely on.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you kind of highlighted the fact that we are obviously in the United States in general facing a housing shortage, which is, you know, kind of translating into an affordability issue for housing. But at the same time, we're also dealing with so many other issues in this space of urban planning. And so that focus and highlight on, it's not just about housing, it's also about economic mobility or economic sustainability for a community. And the fact that like you want to really focus on that is important, because sometimes I do feel like we get so caught up in like, we're in a housing crisis and we have to do everything, we have to dedicate and focus all of our resources towards that. And it's like, okay, yes, and that's important. But at the same time, we're also dealing with additional issues in our community. And so I really like that that's something that you're choosing to focus on while also acknowledging those other issues. And I think the food park is such an awesome concept, just a way to activate space and reclaim space and kind of get the community more engaged with one another, and also providing them resources and tools and, you know, just a space for them to kind of collaborate with one another. I think that's really amazing.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'm glad that you noted about the housing thing. Like my friends and I, we joke all the time, like I did not go the housing track in grad school because I knew it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of planning as a whole, takes a lot of like mental and emotional strain. Yeah. So yeah, I had to pick my battle, and I was like, housing is not, it's not the fight for me.
I feel you there. I've taken a couple housing classes with Natalie, and I'm like, we took an affordable housing development class, and just the financial analysis itself, I'm like, I don't understand what is happening. And I cannot comprehend how people do this like on a day. Like it is crazy. And that's just like one little part of it. And it's just like insane. So I feel you there.
Don't worry, guys, I'm taking this fight on.
Yeah. That is, you know, there's different things for different people, whether it's housing affordability and attainability. I have friends in transit who are great at transit and transportation. That's also not really my jam. Like I get it. My mentor is like all about transit. But it's just, I try to weave the two, but like my thing has always been places and how people connect to them. It's particularly Black people and how they move around in them. Yeah. So when we talk about that at planning, you're right. I feel like every conference, every virtual webinar, there's bound to be two or three sessions just about housing.
Yes.
And although it is important, especially for communities of color, even if they have housing, they don't have any way to afford them. Even if they, even if you put up multifamily and like rent is, you know, $1,650, without a decent job, like they're still going to be back at square one. And I think we're guilty of pouring everything into one cup. Like everything has to be focused on housing and transit right now, or housing and highways. And it's important, most definitely. But once we get all these things, well, sort of get them on track community by community, now what? Like, how do we get the people to stay? How do we get them sustained? How do we help them be stabilized? So I'm glad that you noted that for sure.
Yeah, because it is one aspect where even in the housing space, like when I'm learning about housing or the discussion of housing, there's constantly the concept of, yes, housing is a structure. But that's really like, if you think about it, housing and housing development, it's a structure. It has nothing to do with the community space or the folks that are there. So then it becomes, like you said, we can build the housing. How do we keep people there? How do we activate those spaces? How do we make it so that the community doesn't just feel like, oh, I'm living in these four walls and, you know, yes, I have shelter, but also how do I embrace my community? How do I act? How do I engage with the space around me? And so we can't just kind of put it in this box of, it's only housing. It has, there's so many other elements and they're all intersectional with one another. And so, although yes, like I'm really big on housing, Sam knows this, everybody knows this. I'm like housing, let's get it as fast as possible. But at the same time, it's also so much more so because it really is about the community and who you're building this housing for. And I think that's really, really important. So I think folks like you who are doing this work and making sure that you're highlighting the other challenges that communities are facing is extremely essential in this conversation, regardless of whether we're talking about housing or transportation or, you know, the environment, whatever it may be.
For sure.
Yeah. And I don't know how you do it all. Like everything that you've talked about.
This, I don't even.
Yeah. I'm like, how do you have two like full, like 9 to 5? Like I just, I'm in school and I have a part-time job and I feel like I'm drowning. So kudos to you for that. But I think kind of the last big thing I would categorize like thing that you are doing actively is the Black Planner Collective. And I think it would be great to kind of, we could kind of wrap it up with that and like how folks can get involved and kind of what this space, how it was envisioned. And yeah, I think that would be a good place to kind of start wrapping up.
Yeah. Another, like, I didn't think this was going to grow, like blow up. I just, you know, then unemployed, pandemic came and I was kind of like, you know, stir crazy. Like you can only talk to your family so long until they're like, we don't want to talk about anything planning. Yeah. Just like, we don't want to talk about it anymore. In the midst of like creating DRBTS, which in 2020 was called Black Spaces, and then I changed the name, it was really a blog space. Like I had 100% intended on just doing that first, and the business part would come after because like everything was shut down. Mm-hmm. And it was just these expressing these emotions and these feelings of being kind of like the odd man out. Even if I did see another Black planner, they were kind of on the same mentality of, you know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Very much gatekeeping. So in that time frame, I went to another call that Jose Richard Aviles, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, he put on for like, he's based out of LA, he put on this huge call. And I went into that, I sat in on that, and it was insane to see like 100 plus people on a Zoom talking about planning, talking about radical planning. And I thought, okay, well, let's see if we can convene Black planners, just knowing, taking my own personal experiences, not seeing women, not seeing people who could say, oh yeah, I stuck to my values opposed to, I kind of changed as I got to the top. You know, I wouldn't recommend you sticking 100% to what you say you value and your morals are, at every facet, every level. So that's really where it started. I just created a Zoom and was like, I mean, I had no idea who were going to come out. I talked to one of my colleagues and now like really good friends about it. And she was like, yeah, it was three of us that graduated in our graduate program out of like 50 students. So she's like, it's definitely needed. And it's nice to be able to connect with other people. The first one had like 50 people and I didn't know what to do. Like I hadn't anticipated that many people from all over, like all over the United States. And it became, they were like, hey, do you keep track of it? And I was like, not really. It's just kind of like a thing. And it started to be on a more regular basis. And even now, like having it in 2023, like we had one in January, people that have literally been coming to them back when they were just like scratched and thrown together. And they're still pretty much thrown together. And I do that on purpose. Like I don't create like an agenda or anything like that. It's really just an open space for people to talk about their jobs or their coworkers or even about switching jobs or getting passed up on jobs because part of them feels like it was because of race or because of them being not only a Black woman, but maybe a Black woman that's queer or a Black man that's queer. That space was cultivated not only as a space to see other planners, but as a safe space. Like you already of the notion of you have to work 10 times harder, but also kind of keep your life very private. And, you know, in the fear that it'll be used against you when it comes time to be promoted or whatever. And just connecting, like people from the same classes have been on the call and didn't know it, just being there, from students to like seasoned planners to like mid-career professionals. It's really grown as far as you're seeing it from both spans. Like somebody that started on the cause. You know, she found a job through the cause and utilized the cause of, hey, I'm now trying to extra more money based on what I know and what I do. The cause acts as a really good sounding board of people who are nonprofit, public sector, private sector, doing their own thing, or have bounced amongst all of them. So it's really just kind of taken a life of its own. It's people that are like interested in it. It's free. I just have people register now because I'm slightly lazy, slightly trying to be more efficient of just, it categorizes their email address and they just kind of stay in the loop. Mm-hmm. But it's simple. It's not, you know, formalized or incorporated or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The intent was always for it to be a space that you can just be. You don't have to come in the door and say all the letters behind your name or what you do and what school, whatever. It's not about that. Mm-hmm. People can mention it and they have conversations and they connect, but it's really about seeing other people or hearing other voices and hearing some of the challenges of, you know, workplace issues or workplace anxieties, or sometimes hearing somebody else say, I had to quit my job because it was taking a toll on me mentally, may inspire somebody else to be like, I'm in the same situation and I just don't know how to express it to my employer or whatever the case may be. And now this year it's hopefully taking an in-person form. People have asked about it as far as part of APA, the National Way of Philadelphia. So that is what I'm supposed to be working on, bringing it in person, creating a space that has now taken a life from virtual to real life of Black planners in all ranges of the field, all aspects of it. And we have people on the call who are like not even remotely planners. Like some of them, they like work a 9-to-5 and they're like, I have no idea what this is, but it seemed interesting. So I just jumped on. And that's cool too, because it's a conversation that it's about planning, but it's also just kind of like, it's about everything. There's people who have come on the call that are completely transitioning careers from like retail to planning. And they come on the calls to hear like, what is it like? What would my day-to-day be like? And even just on our calls, I think we all trauma bonded over like working in public sector. That's like a common thing that we can share as far as, mm-hmm. it's different, but it probably kind of sucks everywhere as far as getting into it. So it's just trying to turn into its own community. And that was all I wanted from it when I started it in 2020. So I'm happy that it stayed somewhat consistent, but that people ask about it, like, how do I join? How do I get involved? And it's just like, just watch me post it on Instagram or LinkedIn when I remember. So I want it to be really low hanging. I don't want it to be like a true and true organization.
Yeah. I really love that. I really do. Cause one thing that when Sam and I started this podcast, we didn't really know what was going to happen. We didn't know how far we were going to, you know, be able to take it, but we're constantly getting emails or DMs from people who are like, hey, I'm from Switzerland, or, hey, I'm in, you know, I'm in Chicago and this is what we're doing. And this is, you know, a really cool, you know, concept that we're coming up with in our state or in our city. And they kind of start sharing these things that I would have never heard of if I hadn't heard from that person. And then it kind of it just allows this kind of opportunity to learn so much more in the space. Because when, for instance, like Sam and I are in California, so a lot of stuff becomes very niche. It's stuff that's happening in Los Angeles or in San Francisco or in the state. And then hearing from other folks outside that are like, hey, this is what we're doing. And that can kind of also help inform ways that you can approach things in a different manner in the space that you're in and kind of reinvent it to fit, you know, however you need it to within the space that you're planning for. But it does allow for a lot of kind of idea exchanging and, you know, a way to kind of bond with people, to network. And so I really think that things like this are so important because folks do need a space to kind of unpack all the stuff that they're going through. And especially in this space, because it can get really heavy, like the work that we're doing, because it does involve the public and it directly impacts people in a really major way. And so I really love this concept of the Black Planner Collective, because you are allowing folks the opportunity to just come into a space and not have to worry about, oh, like I have to come and figure out what I'm going to say. It could even just be a space to sit and listen to somebody and hear what, you know, what they're going through or what they're coming up with or what they're working on. And then you can start to cultivate ideas. So I really love that. And I think that that was also something that Sam and I were hoping for. And I feel that we're accomplishing day by day. So I really, really, again, like just appreciate all the work that you're doing, because it's really, really impactful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I think, like you said, y'all are doing something that connects students in a way that, like, when I was in graduate school, I wish it would have existed. Everything that was out there was like very high level, and I've been planning for 20 plus years. So like either you get it or you don't. So it was really like almost just discouraging as far as, is that a word? I don't know. It wasn't encouraging as far as, okay, is this what this profession is going to look like when I actually graduate and get into it? So I think, I know the space that y'all are creating is one that is curating students in a way that they hear it and it's like, okay, my feelings are valid. Like my degree is valid, and it's okay to be the planner amongst your friends that are the finance people, the marketing people, the teachers. Yeah. Like it's just as important. It's just as valid. And I think hearing it from y'all who are in school, you know what I'm saying? Who are doing it. And at one of like the best schools in the nation of board planning, it is different as far as, okay, this is a thing. This is really how it's impacting people. And even like transitioning to go to planning of, like you said, people DMing and emailing you. Like I forget like to even respond sometimes, because I don't think that I'm like that person. It's just when people are like, hey, do I have to have my camera on? I'm like, no, it's not. You don't have to have your camera. You don't have to say a single word throughout the whole thing. Like it doesn't matter to me. I don't even, it's not one of those spaces where you, like you said, you have to be ready to present, or I hate that even now. Like I'm just like, man, I came on here with the intention of just listening with my camera off, and now I got called on. So I definitely appreciate the space that y'all are curating too.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's necessary, because this field it can be really technical, especially in the educational space. It's very technical, because it's like, this is, you know, the very high level concept of what urban planning is and kind of the very strategic way that you need to approach things. And at the same time, I feel like we also need to acknowledge that like we're building these spaces for the community, and they are not high level and they are not thinking technically. And so we also need to kind of bridge those gaps as well. And so I do think that that's just so important across all spaces. And yeah, we just want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast with us and just speaking with us and kind of sharing your ideas and what you're working on, because your work is invaluable, truly. And we just want to allow you the opportunity to just kind of state where folks can find you or, you know, access the work that you're doing, if you wouldn't mind sharing with everyone.
Yeah. So you can follow, you can follow me personally if you want to, at @THEDEE_P, and then the people come for the food park. So the food park Instagram is at Sunnyside Dallas Food Park. And for all of like the food park stuff from like it's like when we took it over to now, and just other things that I've done with DRBTS, it's at drbtsurbanplanning.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dee, for being here with us.
Thank y'all. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, and keep on doing what you're doing. You're doing incredible, incredible work, and I hope that what you are doing inspires kind of things like this to pop up all over. And yeah, I think we will definitely highlight all of this in the episode description so that folks who are listening can find all of the resources that you've shared. And yeah, we just so appreciate you chatting with us today.
Yeah, most definitely. Thank y'all again. I really appreciate it, and I'm really looking forward to checking it out.
Thank you.
Sure. See
you. Thank you so much for listening. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode of Urban Planning is Not Boring. If you did, please remember to send us to your friends and follow us wherever you get your podcasts.
And remember, guys, urban planning is not boring.
No, it is not.